stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. Belgian prosecutors have identified and issued an arrest warrant for a new suspect in Tuesday's attacks on the Brussels airport and a metro station. The federal prosecutor's office said in a statement Saturday that it issued an arrest for a man it only identified as Faisal C for involvement in a terrorist group, terrorist killings, and attempted terrorist killings. The statement did not confirm that Faisal C is the third Brussels airport suicide bomber seen in airport security camera video alongside two men who blew themselves up there. Belgian media reported that a man named Faisal Chafou was suspected of fleeing the Brussels airport. Syrian government forces moved deeper into the Islamic State-controlled city of Palmyra Saturday, recapturing several neighborhoods. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights and regional media outlets reported airstrikes and artillery bombardment, saying that waves of explosions hit buildings and smoke could be seen rising from many locations. The observatory described fighting for the ancient desert city as the heaviest assault yet in a campaign by the Syrian army and its ally militia fighters backed by Russian ground and air forces. According to the monitoring group, the battle for Palmyra, now in its fourth week, has been costly for government forces that lost at least 10 soldiers on Saturday. 18 others were reported killed Friday. Palmyra, coined as the Bride of the Desert, used to attract tens of thousands of tourists every year. IS took the city from government forces in a matter of days in May. This is VOA News. U.S. President Barack Obama says he's offered the Prime Minister of Belgium the full array of U.S. support in bringing to justice any terrorists involved in planning or aiding in the unconscionable attack on innocent men, women, and children in Brussels this past week. In his weekly Saturday address, Obama said Belgium is a close friend and ally of the U.S., and when it comes to our friends, America has their back, especially as we fight the scourge of terrorism.
This week, our hearts are with the people of Belgium as terrorist attacks claimed the lives of more than 30 people. Yesterday, we learned that at least two Americans were killed. We pray for their families and loved ones. At least 14 Americans were injured, and we pray for their full recovery, along with everyone else affected by these attacks.
President Obama. U.S. Secretary of Defense Ash Carter said Friday that U.S. forces have killed Abd al-Rahman Mustafa al-Kaduli, an Islamic State finance minister, also responsible for the terrorist group's external affairs.
We've learned a great deal, and we continue to learn about who's who in ISIL so we can kill them, about how they get their finances so we can dry that up.
Carter would not say whether Kaduli, also known as Haji Iman, was killed in Iraq or Syria, nor would he say whether the IS leader was killed in a raid or an airstrike. According to a U.S. defense official, Kaduli was actively plotting to conduct terror attacks in the West. The official says the U.S. military believes Kaduli was providing money to foreign fighters trying to develop and carry out attacks similar to the attack this week in Brussels. The Islamic State says it's responsible for killing 30 people and wounding scores more in a suicide bombing in Iraq. Iraqi officials say the attack occurred Friday night on an athletic field 40 kilometers south of the capital, Baghdad. The French news agency reports the explosions happened when officials were handing out trophies to players after a local football tournament. On Saturday, three western U.S. states, Alaska, Hawaii, and Washington, are holding Democratic presidential caucuses in the run-up to the Democratic convention. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton is the front-runner with a commanding lead in the delegate count, but Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has shown signs of being a formidable opponent of Clinton. Analysts say Saturday's caucuses may favor Sanders because caucus contests tend to attract the most active liberal Democrats. 142 delegates are up for grabs on Saturday, meaning that neither candidate can clinch the nomination yet. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
So far, the Office of the National Security Advisor under its new leadership has recovered more than 7 billion naira in both US dollar, euro, and Nigerian currency.
The Nigerian government accuses 300 firms, individuals, and some military officials of embezzling millions of dollars in fraudulent contracts.
Yesterday in the night, we have information that three suicide bomb young women has been launched from Bangui to Limani and Amchide.
A suspected suicide bomber in northern Cameroon near the Nigerian border says she is one of the kidnapped Chibok schoolgirls.
That barbarism wanted to show us death. We don't want their barbarism to impose us the way of life. We had to use the opposite. We had to use joy, Siro says.
And Ivorian musicians release a new song in the wake of the terror attack at Grand Bassam Beach. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. An investigation committee is examining the operation of the former Nigerian National Security Advisor. 300 organizations, individuals, and some army officials are accused of financial embezzlement that amounts to an estimated $241 million in fraud and overpayment of contracts. Garba Shehu, spokesman for President Muhammadu Buhari, told me Nigerians are shocked at the enormity of embezzlement of funds budgeted to help fight the Islamist extremist group Boko Haram.
It is yet another committee, different from the one investigating the defense contracts. This one was asked to go and examine the operations of the Office of the National Security Advisor under its previous leadership. And it came out with this mind-boggling revelation that as they did with the defense, the money for the weapons, they just were sharing money all around. And so far, the Office of the National Security Advisor, under its new leadership, has recovered more than 7 billion naira in both US dollar, euro, and Nigerian currency. And they have asked that another sum of 41 billion naira be refunded immediately. And the veracity or ownership of yet another 75 billion naira would be determined by further investigation, at the end of which government will know whether this all of that also is to be returned to the government or is to be perhaps returned in part.
Did this affect the fight against Boko Haram, particularly when it comes to weapons in this regard?
But let me explain to you the direct how this thing will be verified. We're dealing with the three sets of lines of corruption and just revealed now. One is a set of people who got money for doing nothing. They were just called and they were just issued money from the Office of the National Security Advisor. Purpose not defined. Another set of people and the companies, they signed contracts to do certain jobs or undertakings. They got money and then they ran away with it. And then the third group, which I said will now be investigation for verification, now is the companies and individuals who got money to offer service, they may have offered in part, but there is no evidence of completion. So how much of it do they rightfully deserve to be paid? So that's the kind of thing. Does this affect the operations of the... Of course, yes. Now, as we speak, you know that Boko Haram, we are just at the finishing stage of the entire war now, because government has been able to free funds, money that would have been going into the pockets of military commanders and politicians. They are procuring weapons. They are paying salaries and allowances to military men, and the spirit is very high among our fighting men. So much of Boko Haram has been minimized to just, this element that are obviously there, as you will have criminality in society. So you would probably continue to have bursts of some of these extremist actions. But with the time also, it will go.
Does this bolster the government's case against the former security advisor to the former president?
The case against him is to be established by the court. But I think that from the evidence that the government has collected, evidence tendered in court in the case of the $2.1 billion stolen, that one is being heard by the judge. This new one is to tell you the day-to-day running of the office, how it was managed. I mean, you don't need any further evidence to just, this place was just issuing manna to all, you know, kinds of people and companies. And certainly this was not the purpose of the office of the National Security Advisor was established. So the very essence of this investigation was, can you rectify the place? Can you reorder and clean up the use of public funds in the office of the National Security Advisor? Without knowing what happened in the past, you cannot now begin to build on a new future. So this is where we are now.
How are Nigerians reacting to this latest findings?
Although, you know, that we're beginning to be called used to some of these revelations, because a party, a government ran the country for 16 years, and they had claimed that they were giving us good governance and running the country well, not knowing that really they were just helping themselves to our own resources.
Garba Shehu, who is a spokesman for Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari, he spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. A suspected suicide bomber detained before she could detonate explosives in a town on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria says she is one of the girls kidnapped from a Nigerian school at Chibok in 2014. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaoundé.
Babila Akao, the highest-ranking official in Mayo Sava, an administrative area on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, says he asked the military and local self-defense groups to arrest or kill three suicide bombers his intelligence services and the population said had crossed over from Nigeria to Cameroon.
Yesterday in the night, we have information that three suicide bomb young women has been launched from Banki to Limani and Amshide. Immediately, I informed the duos of Kolfata and Mora and my colleague of the forces of law. And also, all the members of committee has been on the field and their work has given what you have seen today.
Idrisu Yakubu, leader of a self-defense group in Limani, says they arrested one of the girls before she could blow herself up. Another surrendered and the other escaped back to Nigeria. He says the girl who surrendered confessed she was one of the more than 200 girls seized 2 years ago by Boko Haram from the Nigerian town of Chibok and taken to the Sambisa forest strongholds of the terrorist group. He says the 15-year-old girl who told them she was kidnapped from a school in Chibok ran to a woman in a nearby house and started crying for help, while another older girl with explosives on her body panicked and surrendered. Idrisu said the 15-year-old girl looked tired and malnourished and could not give them more details about her stay in the forest or how other captives were treated. The girls have been handed over to Cameroon soldiers and their peers from Nigeria, Chad and Niger, members of the multinational joint forces fighting Boko Haram. Midjiyawa Bakari, governor of the far north region of Cameroon, has ordered investigations to find out the authenticity of the girls' declarations. He congratulated the self-defense groups for helping to stop Boko Haram atrocities.
Nous avons constaté qu'il y a un réel changement dans la stratégie.
He says Boko Haram, which he says is on the verge of being eliminated, has changed strategy and is using all of its remaining supporters and captives as instruments to kill. He says he is very proud of the actions carried out by self-defense groups and is urging everyone to collaborate with them and the military to completely eliminate Boko Haram. Some 270 girls were kidnapped from a Nigerian school at Chibok and loaded onto trucks to an unknown destination in April 2014, provoking an international outcry. An international campaign dubbed Bring Back Our Girls was launched. About 50 of them later escaped. Nigeria says it does not know with certainty where the remaining Chibok girls are hidden. Boko Haram has been using teenage girls in suicide bombings in Cameroon and in Nigeria. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The Kenyan government has dissolved the National School Examination Board and says it will arrest the nine members who authorities now say were implicated in widespread cheating last year on the university entrance exam. For VOA, Lenny Ruvaga reports from the capital, Nairobi, on the scandal engulfing the Kenyan National Examinations Council.
College-age high school students in Kenya undergo a mandatory examination to determine whether they can advance to public and private universities. Around 500,000 students take the exam every year. In 2016, the results of more than 5,000 students were voided due to cheating and other irregularities, including exam papers being sold for $10. There have also been unconfirmed reports that exam questions and answers were being shared over social media. In 2015, exam officials confiscated more than 30 phones that were being used during the test. Kenya's government has ordered the arrest of officials it says were involved in the cheating. The Cabinet Minister for Internal Security, Joseph Nkaiseri, spoke to journalists Thursday.
These people are very, very much involved in what had happened in last year's examination. And so they will have to report record statements and show cause why legal action should not be taken against them.
The Education Minister, Fred Matiang'i, said that list includes top members of the Kenya National Examinations Council, which creates and administers the test. This is not the first time Kenya has seen cheating on national standardized tests. There is a lot riding on these exams. Teachers point out that the need to excel pushes students and teachers and even officials to the brink. One teacher told VOA that this vice will continue unless there is broader education reform. She asked us not to use her name for fear of repercussions at her job.
If we were to change the entire system of examining, you know, like you get a transcript from Form 1 to Form 4. But you see, when we gauge a student with only one exam after 4 years, are we being fair? So unless we change the exam system and we start examining from Form 1, you know, and then you give you a grade based on that, we will not get anywhere.
She said the key issue is parents and even teachers buying leaked examination papers to help students. President Uhuru Kenyatta has now appointed a new chairman of the exam board, George Magoha, a former University of Nairobi vice chancellor. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
In Uganda, this year's Easter weekend is being marked in a low-key manner, mainly due to heavy police deployment in cities around the country. The heavy security deployment is due to the recent election that is still shrouded in controversy. Ingrid Turinawi is the Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, Women's League chairperson. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached her in Kampala by phone to find out the mood on this Easter weekend.
I want to tell you that there is no celebration moves around because people are really still in pain. There is no celebration that can take place when our president here is incarcerated and nobody knows when he will be out, nobody knows what charges he's facing. So there is no celebration at all. Everybody's poor. I don't see people Well, at this time, we have been going to celebrate with our people, with our parents, in the villages, but that has not happened.
Well, I understand there's a heavy deployment of security forces in and around the city. Is that true?
Yes, deployment is very, very, very heavy. Everybody's scared what is happening across the country, where people are killing each other, where politicians are being attacked and policemen are being killed. So there is no celebration here. I think we will just go for whole days to come back and open our offices and start work. Even the businesses, they are not here. The shops are not regarded. There are no customers around. It's very evident that we done in first of all, our food and secondly, not happy.
Talking of businesses, do people have the money to spend on this festive weekend?
Nothing at all. I've been in town and I'm still driving around one area. I don't see any shop that is very busy as it used to be. People are living in fear and uncertainty. Nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow. The trading, the deployment here, the fear, the bond rigging, the arrest of our president here. So there is no one who can
That was Ingrid Turinawa with the Ugandan Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, FDC Women's League chairperson. She spoke with Douglas Mpuga from Kampala. We apologize for the poor quality of the phone line. Ivorian musicians have released a new song in the wake of the terror attack at Grand Bassam Beach. It is called Not Even Scared, and the video was recorded on the same sands where terrorist gunmen killed 19 people and wounded dozens more. The message of the Abbey dance song is that Ivorians will not bow to terrorism. For VOA, Emily Eob talks to the artists behind the music.
In Ivory Coast, we are standing up, not even scared, sing Ivorian artists addressing the attackers of Grand Bassam. Behind the song is music manager Chico Lacoste. Lacoste says that he wondered what he could do to retaliate. What do we have to fight this bandit? We have a microphone, so we decided to release a song to tell people to not be scared of this barbarian. We have to keep on living, he says. For the 11 artists who answered Lacoste's call and formed the collective Bassam, or Bassam Collective, it was a no-brainer. Paul Madis is one of them. It's normal that artists stand up, Madi says, because every war is a war against culture. The video of the song shows people singing and dancing on the picturesque beach where, just a few weeks ago, terrorists with Al-Qaeda in Islamic Maghreb opened fire on beachgoers and police, killing at least 19 people. Artist Ciro says it is meant to encourage people to stand up to terror by not changing their lifestyle. That barbarism wanted to show us death. We don't want their barbarism to impose us the way of life. We had to use the opposite. We had to use joy, Ciro says. The upbeat tune invites Ivorians to dance their fear away and to not let the attack divide them, Ciro says, as he sits next to another musician in the collective. Ciro says, here is Mawa Traore, who is a Muslim artist. I'm Christian. We wanted to show people that we are one, like a keyboard. A musical keyboard has different notes, but when you play them together, you get a melody. The song, released just a few days ago, has already generated buzz. Abidjan resident Alassane Soumaro says he thinks it's a great initiative from the musician to soothe the heart of Ivorian and give them a new start. Because it was horrible. We are not used to have that kind of attack here. I think it's a great expression of solidarity, he says. Sitting nearby, Stephen Akboki agrees and believes musicians can be of influence. Because in Ivory Coast, music is important. We've had crises in the past, and it's music that brought us joy. Otherwise, we would have stayed in our shells. For some, the song is like preaching to the choir. Abidjan resident and Grand Bassam regular Ange Franquoisi says he's not afraid to go back. Even later, I could go up and go to Bassam. I'm not scared at all, he says. The song can be downloaded free on several Ivorian websites. Emily Yap for VOA News in Abidjan.
For the first time since the start of the AIDS epidemic, it appears scientists are on the verge of a cure, actually eliminating the lethal virus from the body of infected individuals. The treatment involves editing out viral DNA from infected cells. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Antiretroviral drugs do a good job of suppressing the AIDS virus and keeping it from reproducing. So much so that levels of HIV are virtually undetectable in infected individuals. But the memory of the virus always remains in human T lymphocytes, immune system cells that are the target of the virus. These reservoirs can spring to life and begin churning out the AIDS pathogen the moment antiretroviral drugs are stopped. Now researchers appear to have found a way to eliminate the viral reservoirs from cells altogether so they can never reproduce. Scientists have engineered a gene editing technique called CRISPR-Cas9 to cut out the viral DNA, effectively curing the disease. Kamal Khalili, chair of the Department of Neuroscience at Temple University School of Medicine in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, is lead researcher.
The excision molecules that we have developed inactivate a large population of the cells containing the virus, and then it's basically dropped the virus replication almost 90% in these patient-driven infected cells in the lab.
Khalili and colleagues have not actually cured any patients yet, but they scrubbed infected human T cells in the laboratory of any trace of HIV. The work was described in the journal Scientific Reports. Khalili believes the gene editing technology has the potential to cure AIDS.
It's an exciting time, and the reason is because of the technologies are available and the methods are in place and our knowledge has increased, and then hopefully there will be enough funding to take us throughout this exciting moment toward the cure of the disease.
Khalili predicts human clinical trials could get underway in another 2 to 3 years after researchers perfect the treatment. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Tuesday on Health Chat, host Lenore Modou talks about tuberculosis. Is it making a comeback? What are the current treatments available? For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Health Chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Straight Talk Africa. We will talk about the empowerment of women. Is it a myth or reality? Tune in to Straight Talk Africa Wednesday at 1830 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotin, in Washington, and coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy.
Are you coming with your wello? Dance, you love me, Neka, dance, see ya. Big small stuff, big small stuff.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sally, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and engineer for today, Sidrak Franklin, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a man who takes away another man's freedom is a prisoner of hatred. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Education improves the lives of both boys and girls and promotes development. But too often, girls are denied the opportunity to learn, and in many countries, they are still subject to practices that harm them. Today, worldwide, some 60 million girls do not attend school. Equitable treatment of women and girls is a fundamental core value of the administration of President Barack Obama. Under President Obama, the United States government has introduced a number of programs and initiatives to help women rise. Programs such as Tech Women, Equal Futures Partnership, We Americas, PEPFAR Dreams Initiative, and Let Girls Learn. In mid-March, Secretary of State John Kerry announced the U.S. Global Strategy to Empower Adolescent Girls Initiative. The initiative focuses on three important areas, said Secretary of State Kerry.
First, we're going to work to promote laws and policies abroad that empower adolescent girls and protect their rights. One of the most effective ways to meet this girl is to make certain that every single young woman has the ability to go to school and to receive a quality education in a safe environment.
Second, he said, we will work toward ending early and forced marriage, a practice that too often prevents girls from developing their social and economic potential. And finally, we will collaborate with government officials, NGOs, and community and religious leaders in order to end female genital mutilation, a practice that has no health benefit and no centrality to any religion. We want to build on all of the steps that have been taken thus far in order to intensify our efforts to empower young women at the pivotal stage between childhood and maturity, said Secretary of State Kerry. The secretary also announced $47 million for initiatives that will improve the lives and futures of adolescent girls by focusing on health, education, and ending harmful practices. Girls can have that better life, and they should be given every opportunity to pursue it and to make their own choices about their own future, he said. The United States is going to do everything in our power to make certain that we can translate this all-important but simple promise into a reality. And that is a fight worth fighting.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.